Okay, you say, I want some breakfast. Your so-called boyfriend says, we got eggs in the fridge. Obviously, when you say breakfast, you mean McDonald's. Definitely a side-eye situation.
Morning with no McMuffin? What's next? No sunrise? Get two sausage McMuffin with egg for $6. We serve macchiatos, too.
Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Single item at regular price.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hello and welcome to the Professional Book Nerds podcast. This is Joe. Hi, hello. Today's episode, I am excited to talk about one of my favorite forms of self-care, that is tarot. So I have entitled this episode Tarot and Tea Leaves because we're going to get a little mystical. We're going to get a little granola. Is that what the kids say? A little granola with it. And we're going to dive in. We've got a beautiful combination of fiction, nonfiction. I'm going to throw some graphic novels in at the end. But before I make any of y'all wait any longer, joining me today is my tarot compatriot, Jill.
I am so excited to talk about tarot, Joe.
I cannot wait. Also, shout out to my teammate and work other half, Marissa, for this idea. She called it out a long time ago. She said, you and Jill need to do a tarot episode. So Marissa, this one goes out to you.
It's so good because tarot has come up on the podcast before.
Yes.
But I don't know if we've ever done a dedicated episode. I might have at one
point. Maybe with a tea sponsor. I don't
remember.
I think those were just witchy.
It was just witchy. Yeah, it was just witchy. So I probably threw some tarot in there.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm super pumped about this.
Me too. So Jill and I have some titles for y'all today. If you are looking to try out reading on your own, if you are just looking for a good mystical fiction series or title, hopefully we've got the recs for you. And we may or may not also have some tarot decks at the ready, just in case the mood strikes.
That is true, although I haven't actually decided which one. So I do have like several tarot decks within hand's reach. I just haven't. It's going to depend on my, it's a vibe.
It is fully a vibe. I actually think I've read you with the deck that I grabbed for today before. It's my mermaid tarot deck. Mm. I'm not a mermaid person. Like that's not my vibe, but this is the deck that speaks to me 9 out of 10 times. I'm sorry to the 50 decks sitting upstairs, completely dusty and untouched, but that's how it goes. When you find one that really speaks to you, you use it. If you find one that doesn't, you gift it to a friend.
100%.
So before I dive into my first title, Jill, what got you into tarot?
My therapist. So my therapist would use, we don't do it now because I'm virtual. But when I was seeing her in person before the panini, I would use, she would have affirmator cards, which are they're more like Oracle, I guess is the best way to describe them.
Sure.
They're really cute and fun. But she would have me pick an affirmator card. And sometimes there's like different decks. There's just like personal affirmation type stuff. They're very cheeky and I love them. There's a work one, there's like a relationship one. And so she would just have me pick these affirmator cards. And every once in a while, probably more frequently than not, I'd shuffle them, I'd pull the card and it would resonate with whatever we had talked about in the session. And I was like, this is weird. And I just sort of like started to look into those affirmator cards. And then when I was in Salem at one point, I was like, well, now I have to buy a tarot deck. And I think I'd always been interested in tarot. Like I'm a Scorpio. Like we've had this conversation. Like the occult is in our blood, but I'd had my tarot cards read. Like I'd paid to have my tarot cards read. But it wasn't until yeah, I was just like in Salem. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna buy a tarot deck. And so here we are several years later. Yeah.
I feel that. I feel that. I think I had similar that it was, I mean, Jill and I, our birthdays are a day apart. We are November Scorpios through and through. The occult is in the blood. A lot of inspiration. One of my favorite anime to watch growing up was Cardcaptor Sakura, which all of the cards that she uses are very heavily tarot inspired, which little me did not know. But, you know, as I grew up, I went, huh, how about that? And I think with all of the episodes y'all have heard from me, my love of the supernatural is very present. But I had an ex who really encouraged me to buy a deck and try it out. And while he wasn't good for me, the relationship with Tara was. And that at one point turned into I'm going to date myself here, a Tumblr where I would do readings for people online for free. And that that was a time in my life for sure.
I'm learning so much about you, Joe.
I know.
This is amazing.
I'm really airing out my laundry here.
I love it. I love it.
Now, I think I know the answer to this one, but you have no problem buying decks for yourself, right? You're not one of the has to be a gift. Yeah.
No. I think I only have one deck of mine that has been a gift. No, I have two. That's true. I have two.
Okay.
The rest I purchased for myself. I have a problem with Kickstarter tarot decks. And by problem, I mean.
Yep.
I have to it's yeah. Really bad.
Absolutely.
So I'm like currently waiting for two Kickstarter tarot decks to arrive. I just recently, there's this gorgeous French tarot deck. Like it's like the Raider White, but it is in French. I just said Raider White. That's not what I meant.
You flipped those vowels.
Anyway,
the Rider White.
I did. Wow. Okay. But it's gorgeous, but I don't speak French, and I'd seen it, I think, on Kickstarter a couple of years ago. And I was like, I can't buy it. I don't speak French. I mean, and like the minor arcana is fine. It's mostly pip cards, but like the major, I'm like, and just the art is not super intuitive. And sure. Then our coworker Sydney bought it and was flipping through the cards. And I was like, oh
no.
I'm waiting for that one.
I might need the link to that because I do speak French.
I'll send it to you as soon as we're done.
It's very traditional. I mean, a lot of early tarot decks were just French were a lot of French from major cards. Oh, I love that. Yeah, I am the criminal that robs my bank account daily. I purchase all of mine myself. I don't know if I have a single gift tarot deck, maybe one. There might be one in there. But my kryptonite is Etsy. Etsy tarot deck will get me every time.
Good ones.
And now Instagram targeted ads apparently has learned. But they link out to Etsy. So at the end of the day, same problem. But anyway. And then I guess I have to ask one final tarot question. I'm really stalling today, Jill. Do you let people handle your decks?
I do.
I also know the answer to this. Yeah. But for our listeners, you do. I do as well. So for those of you who aren't familiar, part of the reason I asked if you ever purchase for yourself or if you let others touch your tarot decks, there is a whole kind of camp, and I hesitate to say superstition, but there's a whole camp of practitioners who do not believe another person but you should touch your tarot deck. They also believe that you should never buy a deck for yourself. So just wanted to put our info on that on blast, as the kids say. I'm hanging on to my youth. I'm screaming down the neck to my 30s. So I'm going to stay as young and trendy as I can for the next 7 months, 8 months.
Good luck with that.
I'll try. So Jill, I'll start us off. My first title is a nonfiction title, and this was actually the book that was recommended to me when I started. This is Kitchen Table Tarot by Melissa Sinova. And the quote on the front of the book is kind of perfect. It says, pull up a chair, shuffle the cards, and let's talk tarot. So learn to read with your own voice and get the answers to all of your questions. For years, Melissa has been sitting down with friends and neighbors who are curious about the tarot. She's heard all the questions and misconceptions that can confuse newcomers and sometimes more experienced readers too. Kitchen Table Tarot was written as a guide for anyone looking for no-nonsense lessons with a warm, friendly, and knowledgeable teacher. So you can join Melissa as she shares straightforward guidance on decks, spreads, card meetings, and symbols. And it's filled with real life examples, personal explanations of what it's like to read. And it really just kind of tells you like it is, and it provides the information you need to read with confidence. The name kind of says it all, Kitchen Table Tarot, and it kind of takes my approach to reading that you're just sitting down. This is a part of the conversation you were already having and not so much pomp and circumstance. So this was really helpful for me to kind of get some info and really meet the cards. And there's a quote here from Amber Unmasked I wanted to provide. This book is a major asset to anyone curious about tarot. Reading Kitchen Table Tarot genuinely feels like sitting down with her and getting a whole workshop series delivered one-to-one. So good place to start, and it's pretty comfortable.
Yeah. I think I've heard you mention that before, and it's definitely mm-hmm. one that's been on my list to check out. My first one is The Ultimate Guide to Tarot Card Meanings by Bridget Ethelmont from Biddy Tarot. I love this book. It's a big book, y'all. It's a big book. Got it right here. It's big. I got like paper, like bookmarks in it. But
love it.
Right. So when I bought my first tarot deck, it is not a standard Rider-Waite. I went based on the art, which I don't. It's tricky when it comes to your first tarot deck because you want to be able to connect with it. And I did with the art. I don't particularly like the Rider-Waite standard art. But also there are meanings there that don't always show up in other tarot decks. And so when I started reading tarot with this first deck, I was just like, I don't know if this is really, I'm not sure about this because it's overwhelming. And I started doing Google searches for helping with the cards. I mean, like the deck came with like one of those little white notebooks, but it's just like a couple lines. And the Biddy Tarot website was super helpful in helping me understand the cards. And so I ended up buying her book, and it's so thorough. I love everything about it. I love Biddy Tarot, the website and the book. It's very thorough is the best way I can describe it, but not in a overwhelming way. It's very approachable. She has, tarot card meanings based on Rider-Waite. But she also has her own deck, which is not really like Rider-Waite, which I kind of love. But she goes into card meanings of upright or in reversal. She gives you, keywords to kind of help with that. He kind of breaks down the numeracy of the cards as sort of a cheat sheet to help you remember what are. She talks about what the different suits, the cups, swords, pentacles, and wands mean, and how you can kind of connect though. I mean, I just love this resource. I still sometimes refer to it because she does combinations too, which is really fun. Sometimes if you pull like a spread of multiple cards and you get a combination, sometimes I check just because I'm like, I'm not sure, but also I kind of check like as a spot check for myself. I'm like, if I'm like, I think this is what this means or could potentially mean. And I sort of like looking at her book to see if I'm maybe on the right track. Cause I think that's sort of the thing with tarot that I found is that yes, there is a sort of general meaning for each of the cards, but part of it is all about your own interpretation. And I like having different resources to kind of pull from to help my own intuition of what the cards mean. But the Ultimate Guide to Tarot Card Meanings, this book was and still is probably like my main book for
oh yeah,
tarot card meanings.
Absolutely. I love Biddy Tarot. I think I pretty much every time I read, I have the website pulled up on my phone. It is also a perfect book, especially if Like, it depends on what your overall goal is with tarot, just to wax poetic for a second here. Like, for those of us that it is an intuition thing, that you're using a little more on your intuitive side compared to card meanings, or vice versa, like guidebooks like this can be really helpful. But maybe you just want something to study. Maybe you want to introduce yourself to the cards and like have a new connection in that way. And it's a really cool way to be able to do that. So a guidebook that actually breaks down their meanings, like you said, in a way that isn't, it's not like you're reading a term paper on each card. You're just getting like.
Correct.
Yeah.
And as I'm flipping through, I forgot she has from just from authors, from philosophers, from artists that kind of fit with a card. And she also has journal prompts, which I think is helpful too. If you are sort of using tarot as more for self-reflection than anything else. Now here's my question for you. Do you read reversals?
I do. See, I don't. Really?
I don't.
I think when I started, I was a little more strict on them, but now when I flip a card, if it's reversed, I'll look at the reversed first. And if that doesn't fit with what I'm getting from the person or from the conversation that the cards are having, because Jill, you know, my standard is a 3-card spread. I don't like to work too hard. I just want 3 cards to look at in front of me. I got everything I need right there. If that reverse doesn't fit, I will look at another meaning. But also, if a card comes right side up and the energy is reversed energy, I'm going to pull that, because the card means both things, no matter which direction it's in. So I guess my answer is probably no, I don't read as I'm describing it to you, it sounds like the answer is no, I don't read reversed traditionally, but I do include the meaning if it's fitting.
That's why I don't, because I have found that regardless of if it's upright or like if it's upright, but if that's the meaning that I'm supposed to take from it, to me, it seems to come through regardless
on its own
of the orientation of the card. Yeah. So I don't. Yeah. So if I first, I just flip it. Because I have found that I can, pull them
in. You can kind of suss it out on your own. That totally makes sense. So my next book, this is a fiction title, and it's an older one for y'all. It's from 1973, but it comes up quite often when you are looking for tarot in fiction. And this is The Castle of Crossed Destinies by Italo Calvino. And this is originally published in Italian and then translated. So keep that in mind while you're reading. But a group of travelers chance to meet, first in a castle, then a tavern. Their powers of speech are magically taken from them, and instead, they only have tarot cards with which to tell their stories. What follows is an exquisite interlinking of narratives and a fantastic, surreal, and chaotic history of human consciousness. So basically, this was originally written in kind of 2 parts, and it follows this group of travelers who are inexplicably unable to speak after passing through a forest, and they recount their tales overall. The first part uses the Visconti pack of tarot, and then the second part uses the Tarot of Marseille. So we've both described Rider-Waite, and these are more so reading styles, but sometimes you'll also see different art styles or card constructions. And basically this novel kind of is an exploration of meaning, whether it's from words or kind of intuition. We kind of take meaning from different parts of our lives. And that's what this is kind of like looking at, since the characters can't speak with each other, just kind of by images. So yeah, it's multi-layered. It's got lots of interpretations and readings, just like tarot cards.
So my next one is Tarot by Bacara Wintner. I love this book so much. It is also a guidebook, but the way she describes the cards is, okay, here's the best example of trying to like sum up this book. So I guess we should say, when you are dealing with tarot, it is a deck of 78 cards. There are 22 that are the major arcana. Then you have the 4 suits, and you have cards, which is page, knight, queen, and king. Sometimes they will show up as maybe like mother daughter, that's not an order at all, but like daughter son mother father, so there's some flexibility in there. But for her in WTF is Tarot, when she describes the court cards, she describes them as different families based on the suit, and then she gives personalities to them. So let me just sort of, I was prepared for this. Let's see. I feel like, I think it's the Pentacles. One of them she describes as like the hippie family.
That I could totally see as Pentacles, maybe even Cups.
I think the Pentacles is the, or at least the mom might be like the hippie mom, but like the Son of Pentacles is the nerd, the Mother Pentacles is the earth goddess. In the Cups, the Daughter of Cups is the space cadet. She describes, I think the I think it's in the Wands. Yeah, the Son of Wands or the Knight of Wands is the fuck boy, which
yep,
is accurate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so and I just it really mm-hmm. You sort of like look at the, I feel like court cards can be difficult sometimes for people to interpret. I have trouble with the court cards.
Same.
And sort of describing them as this family, like she gives them a house, she gives them a whole world and personality as a collection of four cards in the same suit. And so her whole book is like that. And with just sort of describing these cards in really interesting ways, that I have not come across in other books. And it's sort of the same way with Biddy Tarot. There are quotes for each of the cards with the card meaning. There's kind of keywords. She uses anecdotes from her own life to kind of give context a little bit. I love this book so much that she designed, which is the Way Home Tarot. And it is, the art is not at all Rider-Waite-Smith. Like it is totally off on its own, but this is the first deck when I saw it, like I intuitively could read it without needing any other context. It's so interesting how that happens with certain decks where the art can be totally not at all connected to anything mm-hmm. you have traditionally learned about tarot. But as soon as you look at it, I'm like, oh, this makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I love that. I'm not even going to borrow it. I'm going to buy it because I love those descriptors. The thing I want to express to those of our listeners who once again aren't familiar with tarot is like, it's not just about this card means this, it's actually about dissecting the images on the card. So having the ability to personify these cards that, you know, that the Daughter of Cups is the space cadet, she's out there. Like the thought of that is super helpful because you can put perspective to it, where so many of the cards, you know, that go from ace to 10 are usually more about the actual item themselves on the card. When you have people, again, that's where it gets tricky. Like it's the same thing with the major arcana. Those make sense because those represent like large concepts like the Wheel of Fortune. Whereas if you're just looking at a pile of sticks in the road, you have to decide what that means to you. So super helpful. And those sound like really interesting descriptions, or a really cool way to gain a new perspective. And any deck that you can immediately pick up and go, I know what this means, the person has done the right thing.
For sure. I'm trying to find, see if I can quickly find it in the deck. I'm sure you are very familiar with the traditional death card with mm-hmm. death on, you know,
on horseback,
trampling over somebody, yes. carrying a flag. And her, watch it be like the last card in this entire deck. That would be my luck, wouldn't
just
it?
Flip it over.
It's close. I'm going to hold this up and describe it to.
Oh.
There we go. Okay. So in the Way Home Tarot, it's like a little deer, I think, mm-hmm. or I think it's a deer. dead, sadly. Kind of like stomach torn open and it's like bleeding into the ground, which you're like, okay, but if you understand,
right?
Because death is not necessarily literal death. And while that's kind of represented here, death is sort of also transformation. And so this is sort of like, yes, this poor little deer has died, but it is giving itself to the earth to like be
to feed
the earth and like create new life from it. Right. And so this is it again. This is not at all a deck that fits what you know, but you can pull the meaning from it all the same because of her interpretations, which I think this is why I love this deck so much, because these interpretations make sense to me. And yeah, fun times.
No, I love that. That is beautiful. And once you pulled that one, I was like, oh, I have seen this deck before. You're absolutely correct. It might have come to work.
It did come to work.
Okay.
it has been at work. Yes.
Like maybe that's where I've seen it. Yeah. As people who have bought from Kickstarters and Etsy shops, we speak from experience when like sometimes you'll get a deck that you go, oh, this person just drew some pretty images and didn't know what they were doing as well. Because on the one side, where non-traditional tends to be something I love, where they're not just taking the Rider-Waite themes and translating it into their art style. I love when it doesn't super match, like the death card you just described. There are some people who just put images on paper.
I feel that way. I guess it's a good question. I was thinking about this when I was looking at our titles and like thinking about this episode. Mm-hmm. When you read books, and it happens in movies and television too, and there's like a sequence of tarot cards, uh-huh. You can tell.
Always.
You can tell who has done even.
Even a touch of research.
Touch of research into tarot cards before throwing them into a scene. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like every time they pull the death card and they're like, oh, I'm going to die. No, if you want that, pull the devil, like, or something right? dramatic like that. Give them the 10 of swords. Like, come on.
Yeah, you pull the 3 of swords and they're like, your relationship is in a great spot right now. I'm like, okay.
Nope. That would be 2 of cups, but thank you very much.
Right. Yeah. You can always tell. You can right. tell.
So my next title is The City of Lost Fortunes by Brian Camp. This is a contemporary fantasy set in New Orleans following Jude, who is a man with talent. Jude can locate anything that has been lost, but after Katrina hits, his talent becomes a curse and he finds himself on the edge of madness. So post-Katrina New Orleans is a place haunted by its history and the hurricane's destruction. Street magician Jude Dubuisson is likewise burdened by his past and by the storm, because his secret magical ability to find lost things has been passed on to him by the father he has never known, but as mentioned before, not quite working right, or it's, you know, really driving him to the brink here. So Jude has been lying low since the storm, which caused so many things to be lost that it played havoc with his magic. But his retirement ends abruptly when the fortune god of New Orleans is murdered and Jude is drawn back into the world he tried so desperately to leave. So a world full of magic, monsters, and miracles, a world where he must find out who is responsible for the fortune god's death. This all is to uncover the plot that threatens the city's soul and discover what his talent has always been trying to show him, what it means to be his father's son. So this kind of, yeah.
Yes, please.
This hits the like mythology mark. It's that, you know, my favorite realm of this is the real world, but not. It's a really fun read. And I wish there was more.
Pretty. Yeah, the cover is very pretty too.
Very pretty. That's where the kind of tarot inspiration clearly shows.
I like it. Mm-hmm. I like it. My next one is The Book of Speculation by Erica Swiler. I think this is one of the first books I read after starting at Overdrive. Just it like came around out like a right after I'd, you know, like around that time. And so this is about Simon Watson. Simon is a young librarian. He lives alone in a house that is slowly crumbling toward the Long Island Sound. His parents are long dead. His mother, a circus mermaid who made her living by holding her breath, drowned in the very water his house overlooks. His younger sister, Enola, ran off 6 years ago and now reads tarot cards for a traveling carnival. One June day, an old book arrives on Simon's doorstep, sent by an antiquarian bookseller who purchased it on speculation. Fragile and water damaged, the book is a log from the owner of a traveling carnival in the 1700s who reports strange and magical things, including the drowning death of a circus mermaid. Since then, generations of mermaids in Simon's family have drowned, always on July 24th, which is only a few weeks away. As his friend Alice looks on with alarm, Simon becomes increasingly worried about his sister. Could there be a curse on his family? What does it have to do with the book? And can he get to the heart of the mystery in time to save his sister? This book was just love. I just loved this book. I love books about books. Who doesn't? Mm-hmm. Circus Mermaid. Thank you. Yes. you know, you have like family saga going back several generations, trying to sort of solve that kind of mystery of who we are and how we got here. So I loved this book. And yes, the sister is a tarot card reader for a traveling carnival.
I think it's my turn to say yes, please. I would very much like to read that. And the moment you said, oh, one of the first books I read at Overdrive, it's about a librarian. I went, ah, yes, that makes sense.
Right. Tracks. I know.
Tracks.
I think, I don't remember how I came across it, but I feel like our coworker Rachel had written maybe a blog post, like review of it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to need this book, please. Yes. And tomorrow. Yeah.
Sounds fantastic. So my next title, and Jill, this is where I implore you to look up the cover for this one because fits the theme a little too on the nose. This is Andromeda Klein by Frank Portman. Her hair is kind of horrible. Her partner in occultism, Daisy, is dead. Her secret, estranged, much older, and forbidden boyfriend, in theory, has gone AWOL. And her mother has learned how to text. Now, this book is from 2009. So for those of us who were living this terror, it was scarier then than it is now. Unfortunately, kids today will never know the joy of when parents couldn't text. In short, things couldn't get much worse until they do. Daisy seems to be attempting to make contact from beyond. Books are starting to disappear from the library. And then, strangely and suddenly, Andromeda's tarot readings are beginning to predict events with bizarrely literal accuracy. Omens are everywhere. Dreams, swords, fires, hidden cards, lost, broken, and dead cell phones. And what is Daisy trying to tell her? In the ensuing struggle of neutral versus evil, it's Andromeda Klein against the world, modern society, demonic forces, and the friends of the library.
Speaking of the Three of Swords, like, who puts the Three of Swords on the cover of a book?
Yep. I mean, the moment you said it, I was like, ah, yes, just you wait. Just you wait. I love that this is like, the craft energy is abundant here. The cover of the book is she's hollowed out a book to hide her tarot cards in. And the one on the top is the Three of Swords, which I guess, should we give a meaning for the Three of Swords now?
Okay. Like to describe the card, that's basically describe the card, which is sure. You have three swords piercing a heart. There's sometimes blood dripping from the heart. Like clouds in the background because it's a storm. Like, it's not a good card, y'all. It is not a good card.
And this is the card that I judge just about every deck by, because while I have said that I will accept, you know, any sort of interpretation, if the Three of Swords is not a heart with three swords through it, I'm not going to buy it, like, or I'm not going to trust it. This is the one card that for me can't really change.
That's fair. I judge by the Ten of Swords. So,
it's that's
the same kind of energy, I think, of like,
very
I'm
true.
Very attracted to, maybe it's a Scorpio in me. I'm very attracted to like those kinds of cards, like the Ten of Swords, the Three of Swords, the Tower.
Yes.
My favorite.
I suppose I, yeah, I Death? Should say.
I mean,
I aim for the art of this one. This is the one that I am picky on. Like, it has to look like it has to look this way.
That's fair.
Energy wise, if it looks this way, the energy should be right. But yes, if I'm checking the rest of it, this is my, like, you know, when you're looking at an article to make sure the sources are good, and the moment you see, like, the strange one, you're like, oh, this is my easy, like, first pass check. The rest of those, yeah, I tend to look at, like, the Ten of Swords and the Ten of Wands. That's my other, like, solid check. From Biddy Tarot herself, the Three of Swords upright means heartbreak, emotional pain, sorrow, grief, and hurt. And then reversed, for those of you who read inverted, negative self-talk, releasing pain, optimism, and forgiveness. So interesting meanings there. And I wonder if both sides of the coin will play out in this title.
I imagine.
If it's written right.
If it's written right, that's right.
I mean, no spoilers from me. I'm just recommending y'all read it. If you need some angsty teen energy, this is a fun way to do it.
And who doesn't need angsty teen energy?
Mm-hmm.
My next one is The Death of Mrs. Westaway by Ruth Ware. So this is for those of you who are mystery readers and looking for something along that line. I love Ruth Ware. She tends to write mysteries that are very similar to, they're like closed door mysteries that are similar to Agatha Christie, and this is no exception. So on a day that begins like any other, Hal receives a mysterious letter bequeathing her a substantial inheritance. She realizes very quickly that the letter was sent to the wrong person, but also that the cold reading skills she's honed card reader might help her claim the money. Soon, Hal finds herself at the funeral of the deceased, where it dawns on her that there is something very, very wrong about this strange situation and the inheritance at the center of it. I love, again, I said I love Ruth Ware's books, and this was no different. So Hal works sort of on like a boardwalk as a tarot card reader. She learned it, I think it was from her mother. She just receives this letter that's like, you are due this inheritance from this family that you've never met before. And she's like, I don't think that's right, but also I need money. So she goes, and it's in this big old house, and it's that, like, you know, gothic horror feel. And she's trying to figure out if there is a connection to her, like, was it a mistake? I like all of Ruth's books. It was a delightful read. It was a delightful read if you're into those gothic horror mystery type things with tarot.
I love Ruth Ware. She is so much fun to read.
I don't know. Her books are just, they're just a fun read. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, I don't want to say they're like fast, but they're kind of fast. Like, they're well-paced, I find. I love Agatha Christie type like style of books, and she has done a good job of sort of continuing that tradition. Definitely. And yeah.
It also reminded me a little bit of the book I gave on the pod to wrap up last year, The Moon, the Stars, and Madame Barova. This is kind of like the foil to that, the murder mystery foil of that.
Yeah.
And another tarot-centric book that I couldn't include because I've already talked about it, but shout out.
I wondered about that, and I was like, oh yeah, you did mention that previously, specifically as for its tarot, so that's probably why it's not on your list.
But definitely. Definitely why it wasn't there, but you gave me the perfect intro. And we're going to continue with like a great string here, because I am now going to give you my mystery title. This is The White Magic Five and Dime by Steve Hawkinsmith. It's more along the lines of like a cozy mystery, which I'm a fan of Murder, She Wrote, so you know I love a cozy mystery. But this is, like I said, The White Magic Five and Dime by Steve Hawkinsmith. And much to Alanis McLaughlin's surprise, her estranged con woman mother has left her an inheritance, the White Magic Five and Dime, a shop in tiny Berdachi, Arizona. Reluctantly traveling to Berdachi to claim her new property, Alanis decides to stay and pick up her mother's tarot business in an attempt to find out how she died. With help from a hunky cop and her mother's live-in teenage apprentice, Alanis begins faking her way through tarot readings in order to win the confidence of her mother's clients. But the more she uses the tarot deck, the more Alanis begins to find real meaning in the cards and the secrets surrounding her mother's demise. Who doesn't need a fun one?
Yes. I think there's something about, like, it's like two books back to back where there's like a mother involved and tarot cards and interesting.
Could this be a theme perhaps?
Now for something completely different. My next one is the Dark Tower series, starting with The Gunslinger by Stephen King. Which, if you are at all familiar with Stephen King and The Dark Tower, we have Roland. He is the last gunslinger. This is a very long series of Roland traversing like lots of books. But in The Gunslinger, there is a series. There's a section, a scene with tarot cards, or I feel like they're Stephen King's interpretation of tarot cards within the context of the Dark Tower universe, because it has cards like The Prisoner and I can't remember the other. So they're not exactly a direct like one-to-one, but you can probably figure out what he's talking about. It's surprising. I don't think there's that many Stephen King books that use tarot, and that somewhat shocks me because I feel like that would be a natural.
That feels kind of like a vibe he would dive right into.
I feel like it would be a vibe that he would be all about.
Right, like Pet Sematary, they go to the small town psychic to figure out what is going on. Like, even if it's just a plot device, I'm surprised there's not more tarot in Stephen King.
I agree. But there's a sequence where the man in black has sort of uses tarot to discuss, you know, sort of share the gunslinger's fate, which is, again, I feel like that would come up often, but it does not in Stephen King. I feel like, I think his one fantasy book, The Eye of the Dragon, might be the only other one that discusses tarot, so... Missed opportunity, Mr. King.
Fully missed opportunity.
There's a lot Steven. You could do. You know what? I will say, so I'm sure you potentially do this as well. I don't know. But like, I have in my mind, like, if I were to design a tarot deck, like what?
Of course.
Okay. So I have two. I have one. I have drawings, partial drawings for like a Mad Men themed tarot deck. But when it comes to just like general readings or sort of how I think of the cards, I use a lot of pop culture references because that's how my brain works. And whenever I think of the Nine of Swords, which is all about like the nightmares, I'm like, oh, that's Pennywise. Pennywise is 100% the Nine of Swords. Don't tell me he's not. It like personalizes for each person. I mean, like it's so obvious to me that Pennywise is my Nine of Swords.
A horror, a pop horror tarot deck, perhaps?
I mean, I have like, the Six of Wands is my Survivor card, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're like
Survivor, so it's our Sydney Prescott. I was thinking Survivor Final Girl.
No,
I'll
that's
switch
fair.
My brain.
No.
Yeah.
But it's the same idea of like, you know, there are torches, you have your torch, you're so close to winning, but you're not there yet. The Seven of Cups is my in Indiana Jones because of that last scene in The Last Crusade. Like, don't let the pretty cup do.
I love that. I love that idea. And I don't... Right now, I'm challenging myself to meet the cards kind of all over again. And maybe part of my exercise in that will be just kind of drawing my own interpretation of the cards that I'm looking at. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
It's been helpful, I think, because, you know, again, there's a traditional meaning, but so much of it is just sort of what you bring to it and what you see. And using that rather than trying to memorize somebody else's interpretation. And again, if you read a lot of guidebooks, everyone's is a little bit different. So I keep a notebook with my interpretations, just little keywords to help me.
I think that's super important. Super important to figure out your own path in tarot, just as much as in life. Look at that. We're getting philosophical on the pod today.
Love it. Love it.
So my last title, and then I have two shout outs. This is where I'm shoehorning in the tea leaves. This is A Magic Steeped in Poison by Judy I. Lynn. So for my last one, I have a debut novel, which is listed as the first in a duology, which I believe should be called a duet. I don't know why, but the word duology has made me angry. and I think it needs to be rebranded. But this is great for fans of Adrienne Young and Leigh Bardugo. So this is, once again, A Magic Steeped in Poison by Judy I. Lynn. I used to look at my hands with pride. Now all I can think is, these are the hands that buried my mother. For Ning, the only thing worse than losing her mother is knowing that it's her own fault. She was the one who unknowingly brewed the poison tea that killed her, the poison tea that now threatens to also take her sister's shoe. When Ning hears of a competition to find the kingdom's greatest Shennong Shi, masters of the ancient and magical art of tea making, also sorry on any pronunciation, she travels to the imperial city to compete. The winner will receive a favor from the princess, which may be Ning's only chance to save her sister's life. But between the backstabbing competitors, bloody court politics, and a mysterious and handsome boy with a shocking secret, Ning might actually be the one in danger. So this title just came out at the end of March 2022, and the second book in the duology will come out August 23rd of this year. So if you fall in love with the first one like I did, you won't have to wait long for the story to be complete.
That sounds really good. I'm going to have to check that out immediately.
And since Emma's not here, I'll say it. The cover is beautiful. It is very like Artist Alley vibes to me. It's very, you went to the convention and you're checking out the merch. But it's, I think it's beautiful. It's kind of got like watercolor elements or just like very light illustrative elements. And yeah.
Oh, it like just came out now.
Oh, like fresh, like March 28th or 29th.
Okay. Cause I'm like, I feel like I have seen this recently and that would explain why. It has probably been on like Instagram or TikTok or Twitter or all of them, because that looks very familiar. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I won't be checking it out right now, but we'll be putting it on hold and that's okay.
Yes. I'm on the hold list. I have no problem, with anyone who has to wait for it. It is brand new. Yeah. Like fresh.
I know. I was like looking at that release date. I was like, oh, that's like last week.
Huh? Yeah, like a few days ago.
Got
it. Pretty sure it was like Friday.
Yeah.
And today is Monday. So good luck, y'all.
Yeah. Good luck, y'all. It's fine. I just have one quick little thing, which I know is a book you also have. Because we talked about it. It is Tarot and Tequila by David A. Ross. It is part card guidebook with descriptions and all that, and it is also part cocktail cookbook with cocktails, tequila based cocktails based on some of the different cards in the tarot. And
absolutely,
it is delightful. It is a delightful read. Because you can just like make a cocktail to drink while you're reading all of these card descriptions.
If you are someone who likes to imbibe a bit, or most of these I say could be made non-alcoholic, or there's a lot of great fake tequilas out there now.
Yeah.
If you want to include your exploration of the tarot, maybe in the afternoon or evening, I think Jill and I would have a drink in hand for this recording if it weren't 10 a.m. on a Monday. I mean, no judgment, but it's not our journey today. But it is so much fun. I got this as a Christmas gift and immediately texted a picture of it to Jill, and she said, I'm waiting for mine to arrive.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun.
Well, and then it got lost. Did I tell you this part?
I think mine got lost.
I ordered it and was waiting for it to arrive, and it got lost in the mail and never arrived, or at least did not arrive for a while. And so I got a refund. And then like a few weeks later, I got a notification that I was out for delivery. So the mail system found it again, but I'd already gotten my refund. So I basically got it for free.
Sometimes that happens.
Sometimes that happens. And I guess it's not all tequila. It's mostly tequila, but there's some rum in here. Some other things, but.
It's also a fun way to have a night with friends if you're all feeling a little witchy.
Yes, that is true.
Make some drinks, give some readings, pull out some cards.
There you go.
I love it.
There you go.
I love it. So I wanted to quick call out two manga in a section I'm calling manga mention. I'm saying that like I'm making it a thing. This probably won't be a thing, but if I can, I'll do it. I am trying to pull my nerdiness into the pod in this way. But I wanted to pull up two manga that focus around tarot cards or use them as inspiration. The first one is wildly popular, and I have recently just got into watching. And this is the first is the Stardust Crusaders part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure by Hirohiko Araki, which there's not enough time in the world to explain what JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is, but the TLDR of JoJo is family has mystical powers that they have to use to fight evil. Ancient evil resurfaces, new powers resurface. But basically the ways their powers manifest in this story arc is what are called stands, which are basically mystical spirits that live within them that come out to fight evil with. And all of the stands in this arc are tarot inspired or have tarot cards in their name. Some of the names include Hierophant Green, Tower of Gray, Hermit Purple. They're just pulling the major arcana to give inspiration. If you also are a lover of music of all types or like classic rock, JoJo does this beautiful thing where they name the majority of characters that aren't main characters that are like main side characters. With musicians' names. Like this arc includes Enya the Hag, Steely Dan, just straight up Steely Dan. And then there's a woman named Midler, you know. But in one of the other, I mean, like, yeah, I think in one of the first, in the first arc, there's Robert E.O. Speedwagon. So if you like a good jokey thing all along, that's great. And the Stardust Crusader arc is kind of standalone, so if you just wanted to see the tarot inspiration, fun way to do that. It is teen plus, it's a little graphic in the violence end of things. And then the other series I wanted to call out is The Tarot Cafe by Sang-sun Park. And basically, this is about Pamela, the owner of the Tarot Cafe. What she offers on the menu isn't always a treat for her customers. Pamela is also a local clairvoyant who caters to an elite clientele that frequents the cafe for more than just tea. Vampires, fairies, and other creatures that live among humans come to learn of their future from the predictions of this young woman.
Those are amazing.
Thank you.
I don't know if I've ever read manga before, but this might get me into it.
I think the Tarot Cafe is a good place to start. It's a light, fun interpretation. It's got kind of those 90 occult TV show vibes. And it's fun. And I think stories like this are a good way that JoJo's is that like you like action, fighting, mysticism. There's your one half. If you just kind of want to monster of the week, Tarot Cafe is your other option. So worth a shot.
Sounds good. That was a lot of books.
That was a lot of books, especially when we both snuck three in at the end. Some other references inside. Jill, how do we close out this episode?
I don't know. If you're interested in tarot, there are
resources abound. Resources. Jill and I mentioned three, four different guides that we've enjoyed, if we're counting tarot and tequila in that as well. It's a great way to meet your majors. But while I was looking at some of the other things that are just available in Libby from Overdrive, there are so many different guidebooks out there. You have options left, right, and center. So if you are looking for more of the nonfiction, you can check out any of those. If you're looking for a new story, try out some of our recommendations from today. And if you want to engage with us and talk about tarot, of course, you can always reach us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at ProBookNerds. Our website is professionalbooknerds.com, and you can send us an email at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. If you want to talk tarot, Jill and I will check the inbox, so feel free to send something our way. Maybe let us know what your first tarot deck was. I would love to hear that personally.
Honestly, I would love to know like everyone's tarot decks, because I don't need more, but you know.
I don't need more, but I am greedy.
I'll buy more.
Exactly.
I don't need them, but I'll buy them.
They can live with the others in my home. Don't worry. They have a spot.
There's a spot.
So yes, email us your first or your favorite or both. Let us know. We would love to hear more. And if you are interested in this, or if you enjoyed today's episode, please make sure to rate and review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. You can also do that on Spotify. Let us know what you liked. We would love to see some 5-star ratings popping up for the show. Now, I think that's a great place to wrap up. So thank you all so much for listening today. Jill, thank you for talking tarot with me.
Anytime, Joe, quite literally, you know that.
Okay, well, listeners, be ready. If you want a Monday episode where we just do readings, let us know. Send that email, professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. Well, thank you all so much for listening, and happy reading.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode on overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcast.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Emma Dwyer, Jill Grunewald, and Joe Skelly, and presented by Overdrive. To learn more, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hey nerds, I'm Sarah, the paper nerd, and if you've ever wondered what goes into that greeting card you just sent or received, well, quite a lot. Get your paper fix on The Paperfold, where I host an enchanting mix of personalities and players all nerding out on my favorite topic, stationery. From the designs of our snail mail communications to the precious space created when two people correspond, there's a lot to cover. So come grab a seat in the stationery community's only 5-star paper salon, The Paperfold, now part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.